views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they made it with a bat, fuck them protesting them sit-ins. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you died good riddance. That man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up in your city. And they turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was blood in your guard. The Second Amendment don't apply to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines known as USA Inc. It is a Tuesday afternoon, November the 3rd, 2015. Do want to welcome in those who were listening to yesterday's broadcast, which was on rerun on the station right before I came on air to do our live streaming for today. That podcast, which was about the terrorist victim in South Carolina, the 16-year-old student who was attacked by the officer, former officer, I should say, Ben Fields. That podcast is up and posted in the archives of Black Talk Radio News on blacktalkradionetwork.com. So don't mean to interrupt, but, you know, we do live streaming, and you could go check that out at any time you would like to, and download it and share it with others and whatnot. But that was a very informative broadcast and well worth listening to. So if you didn't get to finish, I don't know how far into it it was. Please check that out later, after today's program. Today is Tuesday, so, Tando Radio Show will also be live streaming today on Black Talk Radio Network. And then tonight at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, Why You Mad Sun Radio, one of our media partners, will also be streamed live here on the network if nothing happens. If they haven't canceled it or anything, but they normally do their program on Tuesday at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. So that's just to give you a heads up of the live streaming that you can check out today on blacktalkradionetwork.com. Let me go ahead and let you all know what we will be discussing today before I just share a little bit of news with you. We are scheduled to be speaking with Dr. Frances Cress Welsing. I invited her to the program through my assistant, Cece. Thank you, Cece, for making it happen. And we wanted to bring her on the program to help us gain a better understanding of the behaviors of non-white people who seem to be in denial about systemic racism, justifying the brutal treatment of people by agents of the system of racism and white supremacy, like Ben Fields terrorized that 16-year-old girl at Spring Valley High School. And there have been people justifying that. And I'm not just talking about the 40 or so children who protested to get the man his job back, but I'm talking about the adults that I have observed on social media. And I'm talking about non-white people, the adults, and people I've heard on different radio programs. And it just blows my mind. that people could look at that video and do all kind of verbal or mental gymnastics to try to justify that attack on that young young lady. And so we want to understand these behaviors. Also, there's another guy that's getting a lot of attention, non-white person, black male, who made some illogical statements concerning police brutality. There, y'all might remember the grandmother. What was her name? Peggy. I got the clip. I'm gonna play Peggy Hubbard, who went on YouTube and blasted Black Lives Matter. And of course, all of these type of individuals, when they engage in that type of behavior, the white supremacists will make sure that they put it on their network television and they share it widely with their friends, and these sort of things go viral. And it makes a lot of other more conscious non-white people angry, but I don't think it's healthy to get angry at them. I mean, yeah, you get angry about what they're engaging in and how it may help the system of racism and white supremacy, but I don't think it's healthy to get angry at them and make it personal. And I think it may help us in dealing with our own frustration with other non-white people when they engage in such behavior if we look at it as a mental sickness. And I think all of us are in some way, some form or fashion, some to a greater degree than others, are affected negatively, you know, by white supremacy in the system that enforces it. And it just takes a toll on our mental health. And so some of us, you know, we're a little bit more sicker than others. And so if we look at it as a mental health issue, then perhaps we won't get so angry or allow our anger to be directed at these individuals personally. So, again, I wanted to also get Dr. Welsing psychoanalysis of this type of behavior and any suggestions that she can give us on methods to treat people, because maybe, you know, it's one of our family members or something and we want them to get help and we can't convince them to go see a psychiatrist. And I'm talking about a psychiatrist like Dr. Welsing. I'm not talking about a white supremacist psychiatrist who's probably going to have you even more confused than you were when you went in there. But from a counter-racist perspective, you know, if we can't convince them to seek psychiatric help, then perhaps there are things that we can do as non-professionals that, you know, we could do to at least try to push them towards better health, better mental health. All right, so that's what we got on plan for today. A couple of the related cases I've linked it to, congratulating police for not killing us. Peggy Hubbard talks about Ferguson and protests and community rallies for Spring Valley High police brutality victim. And that's actually a link to the broadcast that we did yesterday, which contains a lot of important information and accurate information from people who are actually on the ground there and who have spoken to the victim and spoken to the children and spoken to some of the parents involved. But you know, there was some mental health issues I think were evident in that video and the reaction to the assault on that young lady who's still a child, because I agree with Sister Sarah, let's not call her a young woman because she's a child. And you know, they look at our children as already being grown or something like that. So yeah, but I call her a young lady. All right, let me see if I can go ahead and bring Dr. Welsing online. If you have any questions or comments, I would ask that you get those in quickly. Okay. Yeah, don't wait to the last minute because I may only be on air for an hour today.
Hello, Dr. Welsing speaking.
Good afternoon, Dr. Welsing. This is Scotty with Black Talk Radio News, and we are on air live, and good afternoon to you, and I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy life to spend with me and some of my listeners today.
Fine. I'm glad to be with you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you. This is your first time on the program, but I have been reading your work and listening to your views on the system of racism and white supremacy for a few years now, and I just personally want to offer my thanks for your insights that you have shared with other people throughout your professional career, and you know, I'm hoping that you will help us gain some more insight today.
Well, I will if I can.
Yeah, that's all we can do is the best we can. The reason that I contacted you, Dr. Welsing, is that I shouldn't say I'm sure, but are you aware of the vicious assault against the black female student in South Carolina at Spring Valley High School by the white former police officer now, Ben Fields?
Yes, I am aware of that event. Mm-hmm.
And that event, along with some others that I will share the information with you in case you are not aware of them, it has stirred up a lot of, let's say, confusion in the non-white community, primarily the black community. And a lot of people are, I think, not understanding why some adults are justifying that brutal assault on that child. They may not also understand why those 40 or so children, I know it's being reported 100 or so children turned out in support of the officer to get his job back, but we talked to some people on the ground on the program yesterday, and they said it was only about 40, and the media was exaggerating the numbers. But it just has brought what I feel like, in my opinion, a lot of mental illness or unhealthy mental behaviors to the forefront. You know, and so that's why I wanted to call you today to see if you can help us gain a better understanding of that type of reaction to racism and white supremacy, and understanding the behavior, in hopes that, you know, if we even see it in ourselves, so that we can get healthy mentally. And so that is why I wanted you to come on today, Miss Dr. Welsing. I guess my first question would be, what are your initial thoughts on seeing that attack or hearing about that attack on that black female?
Well, of course, I think that I thought that it was horrific and uncalled for under any set of circumstances. I mean, it's just because it was so horrific, it's just really etched in my mind. I can just see the video presentation of that. It's almost like, you know, there are not a lot of things that are right now stuck in my brain computer like the images of what happened to that teenage child. But I like to put things in perspective. I think that our next major advance as black people is because we really begin to understand in depth that we are in a total system structure of racism, white supremacy. And let me just quickly read my definition.
Yes, ma'am.
Racism, white supremacy is the local and global power system and dynamic structured and maintained by persons who classify themselves as white, whether consciously or subconsciously determined, which consists of patterns of perception, logic, symbol formation, thought, speech, action, and emotional response, as conducted simultaneously in all areas of people activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war, for the ultimate purpose of white genetic survival and to prevent white genetic annihilation on planet Earth. a planet upon which the vast and overwhelming majority of people are classified as non-white, meaning black, brown, red, and yellow, by white-skinned people, and all of the non-white people are genetically dominant in terms of skin coloration compared to the genetic recessive white-skinned people. So I look at everything within that frame of reference, within the frame of that power dynamic, and that insight has been given to us that we're dealing with a total system structure by Neely Fuller Jr., who is the author of the textbook for victims of racism. I mean, he's the first person that said that what we as black people and people of color all over this planet are dealing with the system of racism. It's not racism and white supremacy, it's racism in parentheses white supremacy, because white supremacy is the only racism. And so that system is about the power equation of white power over a relative non-white powerlessness. And what I see in that particular incident is you have a white male throwing a black female child across the room, dragging her and pulling her, and an adult black male person standing helplessly on the side. Now, there are certain facts that, you know, are behind what we saw, but I have been saying to people, if an adult black male had grabbed, let's say the roles were reversed, and so you had an adult black male police officer, a white female teenager, blonde hair, blue-eyed white female student who was deemed to be out of control, if he had engaged in, a black man had engaged in the exact same sequence of behaviors that the white male engaged in, if he, a black male, had done that to a white child, there would have been 10 black men lynched and castrated.
I'm so glad you said that, because that was my exact thought as you were giving that example of role reversals. The lynching was the first thing that came to my mind. He would have been lynched.
Do you see what I'm saying? In other words, racism, white supremacy, is, in a way of a shortened way of speaking, is that if I am white, I can harm a black person, and they can't do anything about it. You see, which was, I mean, it's a play out every, every other day we just get another event that proves that in a system of racism, white supremacy. Now, most people don't acknowledge that we're in a system of racism, white supremacy. They will say we're in a system of capitalism, or we're in a system of democracy. That is a lie. We are in a system of racism, white supremacy. And that means that if the person is classified as white, or the group is classified as white, they can harm a black person at will, and for the most part get away with having done so. I mean, it's just a variation on the theme of the slave plantation, where the white slave master and slave mistress could, first of all, misuse, and abuse, and the enslaved African person could not do anything about it. And, you know, because slavery, formal slavery, has ended, and black people are in different-looking clothes, and they have, in many instances, different places to live, in terms of the power equation, it's absolutely the same as when we were enslaved. Do you see? And so every other day we are confronted with this kind of statement that black people can be harmed, abused, misused, killed, and otherwise destroyed any time that it is decided to do so. You see, and that may be direct or it may be indirect. Indirect is what is so-called black-on-black killing or homicide. Well, that black-on-black is not just because one black person decided to kill or harm another black person. It's the whole structuring of the experience around black people in terms of economics, education, entertainment, labor law, politics, religion, sex, and war that makes black people relate to one another in that fashion, and especially because they are not given the correct information about the power influences on their behavior. They are told that you're in a democracy and everybody has equal opportunity and, you know, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But that is not true. And the frustration that black people begin to experience because they have above depression levels of unemployment, chronic unemployment, and all other kinds of negative pressures and stresses impacting their lives, that frustration is then carried out on the people that are closest around them, and that's other black people.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
It becomes critical that we begin to understand exactly and specifically what we're dealing with. And I say that this is why when black people greet each other, black people are always saying, hey, what's happening? What's happening? And that phrase, that question is raised multiple millions of times a day if you just collectively look at the individual black people who are using it. And I say that that question is raised because we don't understand what is happening. We have been deceived by being given a false notion of what the societal dynamic and what the system dynamic is really all about. And it's imperative that we begin to understand at a different level.
Dr. Welsing, if I may, I would like to share information that I have gathered and also building on the work of those who came before me. On Black Talk Radio Network, which this program airs on that digital radio station and part of that platform, on Wednesday nights we air a program what is known as New Abolitionist Radio. Most people will associate abolitionism with slavery, as they rightly should, although it could be applied to other areas, like, you know, alcohol at one time was abolished through amendments and whatnot. But going back to the example you used of talking about the slave plantation, we have concluded, or I have concluded, along with others who are part of a new abolitionist movement, that slavery was never abolished, that the 13th Amendment did not abolish it, but simply amended it, because it says slavery and involuntary servitude shall be abolished except for punishment for a crime whereas a person has been duly convicted by a jury of their peers. Now, of course, we know we're not getting a jury of our peers, but what we have come to believe is that slavery was not abolished. It was just transformed into prison slavery. In fact, the private prison, I'm not stating that slavery is only practiced on private by private corporations, but also by the federal government, which owns a corporation called Unicor, which uses prison slave labor to produce products and services. What we are saying is that dynamic still exists in a historical sense. The first police department was created in the United States. What they call, well, it wasn't even a United States back then when the first police department. The corporation was not created yet. But back in the 1600s is when the first police departments were formed. I think Boston and New York City have some of the oldest police departments in what is now known as the United States of America. And those police departments, the recruits, came out of the slave patrols, which...
Well, see, I would say that, yes, that indeed is one way of looking at it.
Yes, ma'am.
But I'm in the school of thought that looking at the total system structure, and so whether we're looking at the so-called prison industrial complex, or we're looking at the centuries of formal enslavement, the power relationship between the people who classified as white and the people they classified as non-white, meaning black, brown, red, or yellow, has remained constant. Do you see what I'm saying? And I think that if we are going to be able to solve this problem, it's just like there's a Chinese proverb that says, the beginning of wisdom is to call things by their correct name. And whether or not it's what's happening to black people in the prison system, what's happening to them in the system of education, what's happening to them in terms of economic and employment, what's happening to male-female relations, all of it, I maintain, can be explained if there is comprehensive understanding of a system for white genetic survival. Even the fact of black people and all people of color all over the planet learn if they are in contact with white people and white power, they begin to learn, if you're black, get back. If you're brown, stick around. If you're yellow, you're mellow. If you're white, you're all right. Now, nobody before myself said that the logic of that, that's the color code for white genetic survival, because the more color, the more skin color, the more genetically controlled skin color you have, the greater the threat you are to white genetic annihilation. And this is why black men are the number one target of attack, and not women, because it's only men, whether they're white, black, brown, red, or yellow, only men can impose sexual intercourse. And so I say that at the bottom of, you know, in other words, if you probe at the deepest level that we can probe at this point in time, that the core, it's just like going down into the pit of a volcano, or, you know, really looking at the solar system and saying, well, what's keeping all of these planets, these nine planets, circling around in the fashion that they are doing? And it happens continuously. It goes on, you see, day in, day out, day in, day out. And it's the energy and the power from the sun that keeps those planets in motion. And so all of the things that we see happening, if we go down to the core, we're going to find the white fear of white genetic annihilation. So if we are going to solve a problem, it's like in medicine. I'm a physician. I'm a third-generation physician. My dad was a physician. His father was a physician. And as a physician, you know, people come to the doctor. I just left my doctor's office. People go to the doctor, and they have a complaint, and they say, what is wrong? And they want and hope that the doctor can tell them why certain kinds of symptoms are in play. The doctor doesn't just engage in treating the symptoms. The doctor wants to know the etiology, meaning the causation of the problem.
Yes, ma'am.
And so that you go to the cause of the problem. It's just like inviting a plumber you know, something happens with the water system in a house, and you have to call the plumber. And the plumber sees that the house is flooding with water. The plumber, you know, in other words, the plumber doesn't say, get me a mop. The plumber wants to know, what is the source of the water? Where is the water coming from inappropriately? And so let me go and fix the cause, not get a mop.
Right.
Or get some rags and a bucket or a broom to push the water out, because all you do is keep pushing the water out.
And more water's coming in.
Without going to the cause.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry,
but I just wanted for clarification is that we do acknowledge that the global system of racism and white supremacy is the root cause of slavery. That happens. We just don't talk about slavery in past tense. In prison slavery is
global.
See,
but in other words,
global.
That's your discussion. If you invite me to come on with my discussion, because I'm not in a debate with people who don't have the same view. You know, I just try to, you know, say, well, this is my point of view, and other people have their point of view.
Well, I think we're on the same page. I think we're on the same page. You're saying that the system of white supremacy is the root cause, and that prison slavery is a symptom of the disease, which is racism, white supremacy.
See, I say the attack on the black man that begins with causing him to be unemployed chronically, and an unemployed man cannot play the role of husband and father. Husband and father are not just words, those are functions. And for a man to play the function of a husband, he has to have a job. For him to play the functional role of a father, he has to have a job. And so the collapse of the black family, when you attack men, then you attack the functioning of the family. And the stats are now that 70% of black households are single-parent households. And all of the males that we see shooting and killing each other or selling drugs and going to prison, like I was talking to a gentleman in my office yesterday, and he spent 7 years in prison because he had, on three occasions, set up a situation as a very young man. He needed money, and he decided that he's going to get a gun and rob the pizza delivery man by giving him an address. It was not his address, of course. And so when the delivery person came, then he would rob them. And so he was in prison for 7 years. And he subsequently has, you know, done some very constructive things with his life. But that was a 7 years being in prison taken out of his life. And I just said to him, what percentage of, you know, to your awareness, the 7 years that you were incarcerated, what percentage of the black males who were incarcerated did not live in a family with their biological fathers? And he said, Dr. Welsing, more than 90%. Just like he himself did not live in a household with his biological father. So I say that racism, white supremacy is a war conducted against black people in general, but black men in particular. And I say because of the core issue. See, I've talked to audiences of white people, and I ask them, do you want your children to be colored? Do you want your grandchildren to be colored? Do you want your great-grandchildren to be colored? Do you want your great-great-great-great-grandchildren to be colored? I'm polite, and they're polite, and they say no. And I say, if you mean that, in other words, that no is a reflection of the white minority status on the planet and their genetic recessive status compared to black people. It's just like President Barack Obama. President Obama's mother was white. His father was black. Black is a genetically dominant trait. White is a genetic recessive trait. And so if white people on this planet, just like what's going on right now in Europe, you have tens of thousands of people with darker skin color going up into Europe as immigrants, trying to go someplace where they can get jobs. And Europe thought initially, well, we want to help these people. But then all of a sudden they realized all of these colored people coming up into the white area of the world, this is going to change who we look like. And so now they're thinking about putting up fences and walls to prevent all of these colored people from coming into their area. And it's just like, so that's a variation on the same theme. And I just maintain that heretofore we haven't understood, and that's okay. In other words, to not understand something at one point or to think that the answer is one thing, and so you proceed with that. When we were in formal slavery, then I can just get these chains off. Everything is going to be all right. And so then they, emancipation, Abraham Lincoln emancipated the enslaved Africans, and people rejoiced, and now we're free. Only to look up, and black politicians, and there were black senators, and black state representatives. And all of a sudden, the people looked up, and there were laws that were boxing them in and preventing them from their maximal development. And in the late 50s and the 60s, black people, we went through a civil rights era because they had put laws in place after the emancipation, so-called.
Black codes.
And so then they put laws in place. And the whole civil rights era, where the people were thinking, if we can change the laws, and black people and their dignity and self-respect, and people gave their lives and went up against police dogs and water hoses and police brutality to struggle to change the laws. And the laws got changed, and then there was again a big celebration. It's like finally the success in the civil rights era. And so, yes, black people can go to the same toilet, go to the same restaurant, go to the same hotels, go in some of the same stores or stores where white people go, and you don't have black and white water fountains, etc. Only 40, 50 years later to find that they are going back to attempt to prevent black people from voting in the presence of a black man supposed to be president of the United States. And black people are being run out of the cities under a term called gentrification, being completely run away from the political power centers that we thought were in place. And so no matter what we keep thinking is going on, we haven't gone deeply enough to understand, wait a minute, if I think that this particular action is going to change the problem, and I look up 50 years later and I've got the same problem, I have to conclude, let me go back to the drawing board.
Right.
Just like the doctor who makes a particular diagnosis and the patient continues to be sick. Mm-hmm. Then that doctor, if it doesn't have an ego trip, has to say, maybe my first diagnosis was not sufficient.
Right.
And I've got to go deeper into my examination and evaluation of the patient, because I don't want the patient to die. Mm. See, I say that we are now in the phase of genocide. Genocide is taking place against black people. So we can really call the United States the new Germany. We can call Washington, D.C. the new Berlin. And we can call black people the new Jews and the white people the new Germans. Because we are being genocided. Anytime you destroy the men of a people, then you are committing genocide. And if a group of people are fearful of their genetic annihilation, then the logical sequence, consciously or subconsciously, that they will engage in is genocide. Just like Adolf Hitler said, I don't care about the religion of these people. I'm killing them because they are not white. The term Semite means mixed race, just like all of those people in the Middle East. And so no matter how light you get, it's just like we got black people who can pass for white. But when Adolf Hitler started, I'm looking at you, you look white, I want to know who your grandmother is and grandfather and who your great-grandparents, because I'm tracking your genetic history because I want Europe to remain white. And anybody who's around here who is not in the white category is going to go in a concentration camp, and they're going to go in an oven, and they are going to be killed.
Yes, ma'am. In the historical context, Mr. Fuller, and I agree with what he said, that his suggestion was we should not study history to find out how great we once were, but to where did we make mistakes and got into this current predicament. And I agree with that, and I kind of paraphrased it, but that's the gist of what he was saying. Study history to find out what worked, what did not work. You don't want to keep repeating something that did not work. But since our time is actually limited, I want to get back to our mental health and some of these behaviors, and trying to help myself and others to understand this so that we don't be holding hate or pointing our anger at the wrong people when understanding these behaviors. At the beginning, you mentioned the black male administrator. I don't know if you knew it was a white male math teacher who set the whole thing in motion, but you did describe the black administrator who stood there and did nothing. There was a black female, another student, who did stand up, and she verbally protested, and she got suspended for that. So
She was arrested also.
Yes, ma'am. So can you explain, can you help us to understand the difference in their reaction to the same event of this terrorist attack by this white supremacist against this black
child? You're saying the difference in whose reaction?
The
now?
Black males, the administrator, and the black teenage females difference. Different reactions to the attack.
Well, do you see what I'm saying? In other words, it would be just like, that's just a variation on the theme of the plantation.
Okay.
It's just like the situation in Charleston, South Carolina, that took place in June. You see, where the white person, I can do what I want, and he announced, I have to kill you black people. And I have to kill you because black men rape white women, and you're trying to take over the country. And then he got up after praying with them and the black people allowing him to come into their presence and talk and pray with them, and then he got up and killed them. And he wrote a manifesto explaining why he was going to do what he did.
Okay.
In other words, I'm afraid of white people. I assume the vast majority of other black people are afraid too. They're afraid of the reaction of people who classify themselves as white. So that none of our organizations, none of our major so-called leadership organizations, none of them can really talk about racism. They can talk about the symptoms, but they can't talk about the white mindset and the white behavior that is causing the continuing oppression of white people, because white people fund those organizations. And if white people are unhappy and don't want black people to talk about certain things, even though it is to save themselves, black people can't talk about it. You lose your job. And so the fact that black people are complaining but in a state of frightened passivity.
Mm-hmm. Well, the black female student, she was not passive. She was pretty aggressive in her protest, albeit verbal, and I did not expect her, and I wouldn't have recommended that she physically tried to intervene, but she did something. Her fear...
Well, you see what I'm saying? In other words, I'm a general psychiatrist and child psychiatrist.
Okay.
And so I think what the tragedy is from what I've read and heard, that child had lost her mother.
That was incorrect.
Mother died.
Yeah,
that's correct.
That's incorrect, and that's why I appreciate.
You say that's incorrect.
Yes, ma'am. We had people who knows the family, spoke with the family, was with the family over the weekend, and demonstrating.
Okay, but she though is going into foster care.
She is in foster care, but both of her parents are not dead.
But in other words, she's a child displaced from her family.
Yes, ma'am.
And so that means that certain kind of tragic circumstances.
Yes, ma'am.
Must have been going on in the family.
Right.
And so then she was a child in great distress.
Under the care of social services.
And then somebody had taken a history.
Yes, under the care of social services, there was I forget the exact term, that they come up with plans for children who have behavioral problems, and she was under a plan. That wasn't what for lack of better words to describe it, this wasn't just like a regular math class. This is a class that they have put children in that they have determined to have some sort of behavioral problems. And
see, even that, in yes, other
ma'am.
Words, all across the country, in black school situations, in a large percentage of the schools where black children are, the teachers and administrators complain about the behavior of children.
Okay.
The behavior of children is directly related to what is happening with their parents. And if the parents are in a situation of impoverishment, unstable communities that they don't have any control over, and all of those things, I say, in other words, this is the system of racism, white supremacy impacting the black family. Because I would dare say that in that, you know, group that we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
the vast majority of the homes are single-parent households because the people are under attack. The men don't have jobs. They can't stay with the families and be adequate husbands and fathers. All of that is being determined by the system of racism, white supremacy, which is why my work and my effort for the past 40-plus years is hopefully to try to help us understand what is the core problem that we need to address. What is the cause of it? Because just as I said before, if a doctor treats the symptoms and not the disease, the patient will die. We will die if we don't begin to understand comprehensively in depth as to what the problem is, so then we begin to be able to make an analysis. It's no different than a football team that, is losing and losing and losing and losing. And then they go into the squad room or wherever they put up those blackboards and start analyzing the plays and analyzing what is it they don't understand about offense, defense, and what it is that they need to do. Do you see? Or it's like a person who thinks they want to play football, and they go on the football field with a tennis racket hoping to score, mm-hmm. because they don't really understand the game that is on the field. And so I think that we get closer if we begin to understand system of racism, white supremacy. And I say the proof of how important that is that when the people who classify themselves as white, you know, you might be on television or wherever the media is, whatever particular kind of media, the last thing they want to have a discussion about is racism, white supremacy. You're playing the race card. Mm-hmm. Let's not talk about that. No, because that is the key mm-hmm. that we need to understand, so that what we are dealing with, a disease that is causing, you know, let's say 25 to 100 symptoms. Mm-hmm. Well, instead of dealing with each symptom one at a time, we deal with the disease, and so we knock out all of the symptoms. Yes. At the same time.
Yes, ma'am. On the issue of black fathers, I am a black father. I'm a divorced black father. I gained custody of my toddler children when they were like 4 and 5 years old. They are grown adults now with children of their own. I wouldn't dare say I was single. That's why I said I was divorced, because I wasn't out there alone raising these children. I had help from my immediate family members, whether it was a sister, whether it was a brother, whether it's a cousin, aunt, uncle, grandmother, my mother. I was not out there alone. But on, so this is a area that is of interest to me, being that I had to fight against the system of white supremacy and white people to even accomplish gaining control of custody of my children, because, and I'm not going to badmouth the mother, but let's just say she was not mentally healthy, and it was, the children will be better off with me, in which she would, she did agree to. But are you aware of the 2013 National Center for Health Statistics study on father involvement broken down by racial classifications?
What exactly are you referring to?
The National Center for Health Statistics. I'm going to just read this because I just got through sharing this the other day. I pull it out all the time when I hear people say that, you know, all of these single mothers out there, but those statistics only indicate her marital status. It doesn't indicate whether the father is in the home or living out the home, only if she's married or not. And it says that by most measures, this is by the National Center for Health Statistics. It says that, and I'm reading directly from the graph, by most measures, black fathers are just as involved with their children as other dads in similar living situations, or more so, according to...
Wait a minute. What's the number of black men that are incarcerated?
There are about, at any given time, 2.5 million people who are incarcerated. It is estimated that 60 to 70% of those 2.5 million are classified as black people, males and females, and black females is the fastest growing
demographic. Wouldn't you say that the majority of them are likely to be fathers?
Would I say the majority of them are likely to be fathers? I don't have enough information to...
Well, in other words, the number of black children who, if you did a survey in any school... Mm-hmm. or any community, because black men are being incarcerated at rates that white men are not being incarcerated.
Yeah, there's, I think I can answer your question.
So I'm only saying that for somebody to say that black men have an equal opportunity to function as husband and fathers as white men, there's something wrong with that statement in a system of racism, white supremacy.
Dr. Welsing, it's not a statement. It's a they did statistical study, and they went out there and it showed that black fathers, whether they're living with their kids or not living with the kids, were.
See, I'm not debating with you whether black men can be effective fathers. I'm not talking about
that. That's not what I'm stating, ma'am.
Right. I'm talking about what the system of racism, white supremacy has done to the entire black collective and what has happened to the black family under the onslaught and assault of the historic system of racism, white supremacy.
Okay. Now,
I see black men as fathers all the time in my practice, who want to be good husbands and who want to be good fathers to their children. And the struggle that is involved as they attempt to do that. That's what I'm talking about.
Yes, ma'am. And I'm just simply relaying some information from a National Center for Health Statistics on the issue that despite their struggles, many, many black fathers, of course, obviously the ones who are on a prison plantation, can't be involved with in their children's lives as fathers. But the vast majority of the 40 million, of course, all of them are not males, but there are 40 million black people in this country. The vast majority of them are not in prison. I think that would be about maybe 700, 800, 900,000. If I had to take a guess, an educated guess, I would probably say about 800,000 black males who are either in prison or in jail. But I wanted to try to get a better understanding from a trained professional like yourself is why some of us as non-white people, black people, have different reactions to acts of racism and white supremacy than others have that. And for example, let's use this black female again. Many black people, male or female, support this young lady who was attacked by this white police officer. They have even raised a considerable amount of money for her online. That she'll get once she becomes of age, which will be about 2 years from now. So from what I've seen, the vast majority of people that I associate with, which isn't surprising to me, they are in support of her. But through white people's media, the corporate media, they are really hyping up. And we are also seeing, and I've also personally heard in some people who say that the black female deserved what happened to her, or if they don't say that she deserved what happened to her, that she is to blame for what happened to her. So what I'm trying to understand is, how can black people witness the same event, but we all have, we have these two different, very different reactions to what we saw, and they're on opposite ends of the spectrum? And I'm trying to understand, how is that?
Well, let's say you can take any given family, if they're sitting down at the dinner table together and they mention an event, you got five people, you can have three or four different opinions.
Right.
Black people are not monolithic.
Right.
But the critical thing that has happened to black people is the annihilation of black self-respect. In other words, if you want to control and destroy a people, then you destroy systematically their self-respect. You might begin by giving them an image of God that is the same as the image of the oppressor and train them to love the oppressor more than they love themselves. Do you see? Or you can teach them through entertainment. Pay so-called entertainers millions of dollars and then have those entertainers sing things that include language like nigger and bitch.
Yes, ma'am.
And gangster and thug and dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so you train the people to think those negative things about themselves. And because the people are not aware of the system and how a system is structured and operate, or towards what end, mm-hmm. then they will dance and entertain themselves, calling themselves bitches and niggers and gangsters and thugs.
So
and
you're
all kinds of crude language.
Yes, ma'am.
You see, so that people are being systematically programmed to really be alienated from themselves. Or if you turn on the TV in the morning and you think you're getting the news and the weather, mm-hmm. and you're getting a dose of racism, white supremacy mm-hmm. by seeing white image, or you see a black man and a white woman, or you see a black man clowning, do you see, or you see an overweight black person, but you don't ever see overweight white people on the television.
Mm-hmm.
And just those contrasts, all of that subtle information is going into the computer, mm-hmm. the brain computer, and controlling behavior. And so it's like if I had to, you know, take a guess, if black people were given the option, you say, okay, if you take this pill tomorrow morning, you wake up, you'll be white. And I would say the vast majority of black people would take the pill.
Let me process
See, and that's
the information.
Not, it doesn't mean that, you know, will be there forever.
Yes. Let me restate what you said to me.
I got time for one more question. I thought okay. we were going to be an hour, right?
Yeah, okay. Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry. It's 2 minutes after. I wasn't paying attention to the clock, but I appreciate your time. My last question would be, I guess it's more of a comment, and I would like to get your response, and then we can conclude. And I do agree with you. That is why I created the Black Talk Media Project in 2008. Malcolm X helped me to understand how behaviors are programmed by media and other things in external, factors. What I'm processing from what you just stated is that some people are more susceptible to programming than others might be.
No, I'm not saying that.
Okay,
I'm saying
so,
some people are, you know, influenced in different ways.
Okay.
And so out of a, you know, given group of people,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just like a person walks into a room of 10 people. 3 out of 10 might think the person is ugly. Another 3 might think the person is attractive. 1 or 2 may not even notice that the person is there. So you always have like a spectrum of responses that, you know, should be anticipated. All people don't think the same thing at the same time. It's just like, you know, in a family. All the family members are not in agreement about a given thing at a given time. And so that's just to be expected because people are not clones.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you again for spending some of your precious time with us today. And I just want to say that you stay safe behind what I call these enemy lines.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me. And do take care.
Yes, ma'am. Okay, that concludes our interview. I am going to go for an hour. I'm going to go for an hour, but I'm going to take a short station identification break and some message music. But before I do that, let me say this. I just want to congratulate myself for showing restraint and doing something that I have been talking to my one of my daughters, my oldest daughters, about, and trying to help her to understand that you don't have to agree with everything an elder in the community, in the house, has to say. You don't have to be in agreement with what they're telling you, but you listen, and at no point do you become disrespectful. All right. And that is a conversation that I had this conversation with my daughter the night before last, because I did not like some of the behavior that she was exhibiting towards some of the elders in our family. She's a strong-willed young woman. She's very opinionated, but at the same time, you got to know when to shut up. You got to know when to be quiet, because you know you just don't argue with elders. You can disagree with them all you want to. If they are not susceptible to hearing your opinions or whatnot, then you just be quiet and let them say what they want to say, and that will keep conflict down. I don't think any of my questions that I was trying to get answered were answered. And I also heard a lot of anti-blackness and some incorrect statements about not only the involvement of black men in their children's lives, and their abilities to function as husbands. That's why I pulled up the health statistics from this study that was done in 2013. I am not interested in opinions. I'm interested in facts. If you can't substantiate something that you're saying and tell me what your source of that information is, I don't care to hear it. I don't care to hear it. But I was dealing with an elder, and so I had to keep. I just had to keep myself in check and bite my tongue. All right, but that is one of my pet peeves. Do not talk to me. Don't get on here bashing black males or saying that black males aren't doing this or aren't doing that. All right, I estimate that there are tens of millions. I can say that for a fact. There are tens of millions of black males in this country. All right, less than 1% of them are in prison. Now, just because they're the majority of black males or black females, which are an increasing demographic, I mean, they're really targeting our black females. I know she says that you target the black male, but I know from the studying that I do and the information that I gather in the research of my comrades in the new abolitionist movement that females are increasingly being targeted. And what you saw happen to that little girl in South Carolina, that's a perfect example of that. Our black females are being sterilized, they're being raped, they're being beaten, they're being sexually abused in all sort of manner on these prison plantations. Another thing, if the U.S. Constitution, if the 13th Amendment of that Constitution, which people want to say freed the slaves, if you read that, and hopefully you have a comprehension level above a third grader. If you read that, how can you say something has been abolished and that slavery is over if it has an exception clause in the very amendment? See, white people, white supremacists, I should say, are very crafty. Lincoln did not emancipate anyone. The black male abolitionist, Frederick Douglass, called the Emancipation Proclamation a stupendous fraud. Okay, that's why we don't celebrate Juneteenth around here, because that is a continuation of the fraud that we were emancipated. And then also, while you had 2 million or so, maybe up to 5 million black people who were enslaved physically on plantations in pre-1865 slavery. Okay, you also had 500,000, and this is according to the 1860 census records that show 500,000 of free black people. So every black person wasn't enslaved. And every black person wasn't trying to end slavery either. You had many like Solomon Northrop, who was trying to make money with white supremacists. Didn't care nothing about the enslavement of any other black people, non-white people, or Africans, because all he was trying to do was make money. All right. And then that's when he was kidnapped. It wasn't until after his friends bought his freedom back that he became an abolitionist. It had to happen to him personally. I am not the descendant of any enslaved Africans. A lot of people say that they assume because you're black or African descendant that, oh, your ancestors must have been enslaved. I, unlike a lot of people in this country, unfortunately, have access to my family record. I actually live on the same land that many, many generations of my family has lived on and passed down. So I know I'm not a descendant of an enslaved African, but I am an abolitionist because I oppose slavery. So it is very important that we deal with facts. It was my intention to try to understand psychological behaviors of why a person, two people witnessed the same event. Two black people, black female, a child, in no doubt, and a black male, an administrator. Both of them saw that young female, black female, being brutalized by this white cop. Why is it that only that black female student, besides the others who were recording after she told them to record, why is it that she is the only one that took action? Why is it she the only one who lodged a protest in the heat of the moment, while the black male just stood there like he didn't know what to do or what to say? And we talked about this a little bit yesterday, because fear has a different effect on different people. That fear caused that black male to freeze up because he probably didn't want to get killed himself. That black child, I guess she hadn't been instilled with that fear yet. She hadn't been infected all the way with that fear. She engaged in what I call correct behavior. She showed the utmost self-respect by standing up for her fellow black female classmate. I'm not afraid of white people. Let me get that out there. All black people are not afraid of white people, and we don't live in fear of white people. Now, do I know that what white people can do? Yes, I know what white people can do. I know at any time, these white people that I'm surrounded by in this rural area of North Carolina could all surround our house and try to kill us. But guess what? It wouldn't be the first time they tried to do it, because my grandfather and my uncles kept themselves armed like I do, had guns in every corner of the house, and they were able to fight off the Klan. Not only did they repel an attack on the house one night, but they chased them away, and they went fleeing like little scared children, like most bullies do when you stand up to them and punch them in the mouth. So I'm not afraid of white people. I'm not afraid of white supremacists. Do I know that they have more power, political power, than I do? Yes, I do. Do I know that they have more manpower than what we do? Yes, I do. Yes, there's more numbers of them. But more numbers don't actually equate to greater power in that respect when you're talking about physical attacks. But I don't want to go off on a tangent in the military strategy and giving you the history of where small numbers of people have been able to repel greater numbers and win victories over them. But I don't live in fear. There's a saying, and I don't too much like repeating Bible scripture and stuff, but truth is truth no matter where it comes from. But the Creator did not give me a spirit of fear. The Creator instilled in me a spirit of power, and that is how I live my life. If I was afraid of white people, I would have never lost my corporate job as punishment, because I would not go along with covering up the fact that a white male was sexually harassing a black female. I knew what the repercussions could have been. I could have made a choice. I can be fearful because if I lose my job, then that's going to hinder my ability to provide for my children that I was raising after I was divorced and got in custody of. All right. I could have been fearful of that, but I was like, no, I'm looking at it like this could be my daughter's in 20 years. And what would I want a black male to do if a white male was sexually harassing my daughters on the job? That is what guided my behavior, not any kind of fear or fear of repercussions from white people. And, I didn't grow up with my biological father in the home. I didn't meet my biological father until I was 20 years old, about to go into the United States military. That's when I first met my biological father. But I had black male role models in my life, my entire life. If it wasn't my godfathers, it was my stepdad, or it was my uncles, or it was my older cousins. And I have never been in prison. Never been in prison. So, yeah, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, I was hoping that this interview would have been a little bit more constructive, as I was looking to try to get a psychoanalysis of the difference in behavior of non-white people under a system of racism and white supremacy and terrorism. And no, we all don't have the same views. No, we don't. We all come up under different circumstances and situations, and we have different influences in our life. Apparently that female, if I was her father that stood up for her classmate, I would be very proud of her. I wouldn't be mad at her because she got suspended, because she did the right thing. My mama told me that when I was still in elementary school, when I became a victim of school integration. And she told me, you ain't ever got to worry about me punishing you as long as you do right. As long as you are standing on principle and you're right. Of course, she didn't use those kind of words with me. I was in elementary school, so I'm paraphrasing. But she said that if they ever call her, these white people, to get me in trouble or something like that, to not worry. As long as I was correct in my behavior, I didn't never have to worry about being punished by her because of what some white people said I did. So that's how I tried to live my life. Have I led a perfect life? Have I done incorrect things? Most certainly I have, because of external influences. Sold drugs, was in a gang at 13 years old, out there gang banging in the street, selling drugs. Not because I had to, not because of, you know, my mama ain't never been rich. Our family ain't never been rich, but we ain't never lacked for the basic necessities. The system may have classified my mother as poor, but the way I grew up, I couldn't tell it. I wouldn't have believed you. If you'd have told me we were poor, shit, I was getting 3 meals a day, clean, and that's when I was really into clothes and stuff. You know, my mom used to be a model. Got my fashion sense from her. But I was always clean to the teeth. Anything I asked for in terms of toys or anything like that, and I ain't really asked for a lot, but anything I asked for, I got. So anyway, those are my thoughts on that, and I will expand further. I also open up the phone lines for anybody that has a question or has a comment or has an observation, but I'm just kind of disappointed that I wasn't able to get my questions answered, or there was some miscommunication or whatnot. But I make my daughter listen to this podcast. When you are in conversation or dialogue with an elder, this is how I expect you to act. This is how I expect you to restrain yourself. Even if you don't agree, if your grandmother is telling you something wrong, if your grandfather is telling you something wrong and you don't agree with it, guess what? You're not going to be arguing with them. You're going to be respectful. You're going to keep your mouth shut. And then before you know it, it's over with. And you can move on and believe whatever you want to believe based off the information that you have. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I broadcast from behind these enemy lines, known as USA Inc., every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Also, coming up here on this Tuesday, just to remind you, Tando Radio Show will be coming on at 6 o'clock. They'll be talking about, toxic foods and how the food that you're eating is killing you and you don't even know it. That's at 6 o'clock. Brother Dave hosts that program. That's Tando Radio Show. And I'm not sure what the topic of discussion will be tonight, but Why You Mad Son Radio will be on air tonight at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. All right, stay tuned. I'll be back on the other side. You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
I'm the deputy chairman of the state of Illinois Black Panther Party, Fred Hampton. I have the pleasure now to introduce who I believe is one of the baddest motherfuckers in the world. A man that did something that a lot of us ought to be very glad that he did. He was a part of making the only party which exists in the United States today that represents the people. As a matter of fact, he was one half. Him and Huey P. Newton started out in 1966. Sometimes I think where some of us were in 1966. I think what we would have said if we'd heard about some niggas going out the street talking about cans of guns, fighting all them police because we didn't know they were pigs out there in the street. And I think I'm speaking for the whole party of the state of Illinois. I know I am. When I say that we love Huey P. Newton, we love Elvis Cleaver, we love Bobby Hutton, we love the Black Panther Party, and we love Chairman Bobby Seale. We love them because they were the first ones that took a stand against capitalism and racism and said that we'll fight it till the end. We said we draw the line somewhere, motherfucker. If you try to pass us, we'll blow your brains out. They were the first ones that came through with the program that was initiated for the benefit of the people. All those things that I named, the reasons why we love them are reasons that make it beneficial to us. But let me simply say when I'm introducing Brother Bobby, that we love him because it's lovely to love. Tell me about the people.
You know what we're going to do?
We are going to defend ourselves. Because Huey P. Newton said that power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. Power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. What kind of phenomena? Social phenomena. What is the social phenomena? Black people, Mexican American, any kind of people, begins to learn that the social phenomenon is that, in fact, U.S. racist, decadent, capitalist, imperialist America is a police state. Right. That a police state exists here, that these pigs are doing nothing but protecting the avaricious businessman and the demagogic politician, protecting the exploitative system that they got going. That, in fact, we are tired of it, we are sick of it, you've been brutalizing black people, you've been murdering and lynching them, black people are tired of it. Black people's vanguard of revolution all of a sudden, and it's phenomenally correct also, but we are concerned with that social phenomena. We are concerned with that exploitation. We are concerned with the oppression that black people and all other peoples in the world who are suffering the same common oppression that we are suffering today. The thing is we have the ability to define it. Still, if we have the ability to define it, the only next thing to do is get organized. So when a pig walks up to you, or a pig gets a job with the people, you be so organized, you be learning some tactics, you be learning some revolutionary principles, you be having some guns hit out somewhere, you have some proper tactics. That when the pig gets a job with you, the pig gets wrong, you whoop your guns out on him, blow him away, and then you have the ability, in fact you have made that pig act in a desired manner.
When we see our people being brutalized by white bigots, white racists, we think that they are foolish to allow themselves to be beaten and brutalized and do nothing whatsoever to protect themselves. They are foolish. They should have the right to defend themselves against any attack made against them by anyone. If a dog is biting a black man, the black man should kill the dog. Whether the dog is a police dog, a hound dog, or any kind of dog. If a dog is sick on a black man, when that black man is doing nothing but trying to take advantage of what the government says is supposed to be his, then that black man should kill that dog or any two-legged dog. There will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, as other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. Then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed in on this broadcast, and it is my mission to deprogram you of any passivity that the white supremacists have programmed into you through their media and their lies about our history. Didn't the white people free us from slavery pre-1865? That is a doggone lie. All right. If you think that there are white people out there, I should better let me accurately state this, because I do agree with Neely Fuller. There are three types of people: non-white people, white people, and white supremacists. If you think white supremacists are going to find goodness in their heart to free anybody that they are oppressing or stop oppressing them or free them from slavery or what, you're sorely mistaken. It took 200,000 armed black men along with black women, Harriet Tubman, shout out to her, to that sister who was a U.S. Army scout and spy behind the enemy lines, who stayed strapped, okay? And if you think that what white people tell you in their books and in their movies, like a Steven Spielberg want to make that last movie called Lincoln, if you think that these white people, white supremacists, said that, you know, it's wrong for us to enslave these people, let's fight a war to end it, that's a damn lie. All right. Ever since the first African was enslaved on this continent, he has been, and I should say they have been, don't want to leave our sisters out, they have been in constant rebellion. And they wasn't going on nonviolent work strikes and saying, you know what, we're just not going to work today. No, what did they do? They cut the head off of that person, that white supremacist that was holding them in slavery. All right. And they may not have been successful, but that didn't stop others from continuing to rebel throughout hundreds of years. This is the real history that you got to dig for, that you are not going to find in any kind of textbook that you get from white people. Are there white people who writing about these things and telling the truth about it? Certainly they are. But guess what? The Texas school district is not using their books to teach any of the students in their schools, because their job is not to teach you. Their job is to indoctrinate you into a system and to accepting your position on the bottom. This is why I am glad the Creator gave me a thirst for knowledge, gave me the ability to read, put people around me that will put not only put the books in my hands, but teach me to read them and help me to understand that which I was reading. We freed ourselves. Did some white people help? Yes, they did. John Brown, Reverend Dooley, some others. But for the most part, we freed ourselves from that temporary, we freed ourselves temporarily. But again, everybody wasn't enslaved. And today, everybody isn't enslaved. Are we all under a global system of oppression called racism and white supremacy? Most certainly. But we are not all enslaved. I have very strict definitions of what slavery is. I would not consider myself to be in slavery right now. But I would consider however many hundreds of black people that they got in the prison here in the county that I live in, I would count them as slaves. My brother used to be one of them. Had him working on a turkey farm for about 25 cents an hour. And just because they get paid don't mean they ain't no slave. Again, a proper reading of history will show you that some of the enslaved Africans were paid a small wage. That's where the term slave wages comes from. Doesn't come from, you know, white people being exploited and not being paid a fair wage. No, that ain't where slave wages come from. The phrase slave wages, it comes from the fact that some enslaved Africans were paid a small wage. We have even talked about some that became abolitionists. They got a small wage. They were able to play the lottery. I guess they were letting enslaved Africans play the lottery back then, but they would win some money and they would purchase their freedom. And at least one female I know of, she went on to become an abolitionist. She wasn't just satisfied with her getting out of bondage. She didn't stop until everyone was out of bondage, which has never happened. Because in fact, slavery was never abolished. And I challenge anyone to tell me that it has been. I have interviewed many professors, white and black law professors. You can check the archives of New Abolitionist Radio, and they plainly stated in no uncertain language that slavery was never abolished, that 13th Amendment only amended the conditions under which a person could be put into the institution of slavery. And it continues to this day. That and I don't like bad mouthing people that participated in the quote unquote civil rights movement and, you know, allowing themselves to be beat up and attacked with dogs and fire hoses and just thought that they were going to appeal to the humanity of people who didn't have any humanity. They weren't humane people. So how you going to appeal to an inhuman? That took tremendous courage for those young children, who was mostly teenagers, who stood up then under the direction of adults who were telling them to follow the nonviolent method. I understand that strategy, and it all, you should use every tool available at your disposal. You don't send children into battle with trained soldiers, and that's what police are. In addition to their slave catching duties, they're soldiers as well. You don't send children into battle against soldiers. But some children, like that black female in South Carolina, rose to the occasion when she was confronted with a horrific act of terrorism against another black person because she felt for another black person. And she didn't let any, I don't even know if she had any fear in her. If she did, because fear can be healthy, because fear can keep you alive, but it didn't stop her from practicing justice. And I think that's the problem with too many of us, is that we are living in fear, and that fear has paralyzed us. We love this terrible life so much that we don't want to give it up. I ain't gonna say never been, but once I was on the other side of 30, Now, I would say once my children became adults, I ain't never worried about transitioning to another plane of existence. I'm not going to say I don't care about my life, but the issues that we face are bigger than my life. And if I had to lay my life down, then I will. If I had to lose my freedom and be enslaved because of the things that I engage in on these airwaves and putting out propaganda to the people, then I'll become a political prisoner. Don't want to say that I want to become a political prisoner like Momia, like Robert Seth Hayes, like any of the others. Ed Poindexter, talked about him. Mondo Wielenga. Those people didn't let fear keep them in silence. They wasn't concerned about getting butter biscuits from white supremacists in the form of money and grants so that they can, you know, run their organizations and pay themselves salaries. No, they were true revolutionaries. They were trying to end the system of racism and white supremacy globally, not just here in the United States, but globally. And they paid the ultimate price. Fred Hampton was murdered, assassinated. Malcolm X, assassinated. Mumia, enslaved. Move 9, enslaved. But it was those people who I would say showed the utmost self-respect and not laying down or being passive towards an aggressive people. That don't work, people. It don't work. Sometimes you got to hit the bully in the mouth. Now, let me correct myself in case my daughter does listen to this. I can't make her listen to anything, so I'm going to ask her to listen to this interview. Can't make her do nothing. She's an adult. She has free will. And I'm not some sort of tyrant to threaten her with, if you don't listen to this, then get out. You know, some crap like that. You live and you learn with age. But at sometimes, though, we have to also acknowledge that some of these elders, they come from a different place in time. They were raised under some of the most brutal forms of oppression, more so than what we face today, even though I do agree that the oppression is increasing. And I would say we have always lived under conditions of genocide. It just did not start recently. And also, and I'm not going to say anything about Dr. Welsing's former romantic entanglements, but Jews are white people. They're white people. Genetic testing, DNA testing has shown that these are white people. Judaism is a religion, because if they're, you know, I mean, we can't ignore science, people. And Adolf Hitler, I wish I could remember. I might have shared it on Facebook or my timeline, but I just came across recent information that Hitler was targeting them because of their religion. Now, because they told the public that these weren't white people. Well, if you targeting a certain people based on their religion, and it wasn't just because they were Jews, it was because of what some of those, let's say, more refined Jews or whatnot. They're white people anyway, but the ones that was making all the money and stuff like that, that's why Hitler, and I'm not justifying anything Hitler did, but that's why he had such a problem with them. Because they were like the 1% that people complain about today. They were robbing Germany of their resources, had them bankrupt and whatnot while they were doing all the profiting off of it. And it was engineered, just like many other stuff going on today in the financial global markets is engineered, with a very few people on top who are benefiting from all this engineering of the economic system. That is why he went after them. But then he took it further and just said, you know what? I'm going to exterminate all of these people classifying themselves as Jews. But those ain't the only people he targeted. He targeted communists. Those were the first that he went after. Because of their political beliefs. He went after gypsies. He went after Africans, Afro-Germans, whatever you want to call them. He went after people with genetic defects, feeble-minded people, people with disabilities. So it wasn't just all about some Jews. And, oh yeah, Semitic. Semite, being a Semite refers to a culture. I did research on this about a year or so ago. Because I'm tired of people being confused about who these people in Israel are. Because if they were all Jews, would they be sterilizing Ethiopians who also classify themselves religiously as Jews? They cut their population down within 10 years with this sterilization program where they were giving these women birth control shots without even telling them what they were giving them. Now, if they're all Jews now, they all belong to the same ethnic group, why would they be practicing racism and white supremacy against them black Jews then? Again, this is why it is important for people to do their own research, to do their own reading, to do their own studying. I'm not going to say that some people look to purposely deceive you because perhaps they don't have all the information. But it is good to study for yourself, because when you get it for yourself, and it's not just reading one book or reading two books or reading three books, but it's finding multiple sources. But a Semites refers to a culture that was in northeastern Africa, the Semitic language. These were Africans. Well, no Europeans in Africa. That's where Semite comes from. It was a region. I think it was around Lake. What is that lake? Tanzania? I'm not sure. It's a giant lake, or rather large lake in eastern Africa, that the Semitic culture grew up, came up around, and that, or developed is the best way I should say. Those were African people. All Africans don't speak the same language. All Africans don't have the same phenotype, but they were Africans. They were not white people. They were not Europeans. It's just important, people, that we share correct information. Let me see. Got about 15 minutes coming up in the broadcast. We do have a person who wants to ask a question. We got about 15 minutes left in the broadcast. 704-951-5030 is one way that you can call on the studio line, or you can use the conference line, 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Hit *6 and 1 to come in on air. I think I know who this is, but I'm not sure, but area code 973, your mic is unmuted. Please go ahead with your question or comment. And let me just say this, cause somebody said this to me today earlier. They said I was angry because, they didn't agree with, something philosophical, I guess I could say, that I was trying to flesh out and I was looking for input. And this person didn't agree with me. And they said that I was angry with them. And I'm like, did I use an angry emoticon? Did I name call you? Was I rude in the language that I use? I mean, because you're not sitting in the same room I'm sitting in. You can't hear. Matter of fact, I'm not talking, so you can't go by the tone of my voice or whatnot. So what makes me angry? You know, I don't get angry over people disagreeing with me. I am not I'm not some arrogant asshole who thinks that he knows everything, and I'm still learning just like everybody else. But we can disagree and hopefully, you know, share constructive information with each other. But you don't have to call into this program. to be in agreement with me, you are more than welcome to disagree with me. The only thing that we will do is be respectful to each other. Area code, thank you. Area code 973, thank you for allowing me to go on that little mini rant there. Go ahead with your question or comment.
It's okay, Scotty. You can go on your rant. It's all right. Hi, this is Miss New Jersey calling. I kind of completely lost your schedule. I know you said you was going to be off the air, and I wasn't sure. But anyway, I'm glad that I did call him today. I looked on my email, and I saw that Miss Wellesley was going to be in. Scotty, you know, we can always respectfully disagree.
Yes, ma'am.
You did sound a little bit angry. I can tell. I mean, I heard your voice. I can, you know, even though you didn't, you know, whatever, I can denote it in your voice. I'm very phone sensitive or whatever. I can see that the conversation, and, you know, again,
I was agitated.
Elders have their way of thinking.
Yeah, I was agitated.
Elders have their way of thinking. I have elders in my family who won't change their mind, but hell and brothers, so hell freezes over. But again, we definitely, as you say, have to be respectful and mindful.
Yes, ma'am.
We're not always going to be. They have their own way of thinking or whatever. But I guess maybe my question to you, Mr. Reed, was that, you know, she was, I know there was a little bit back and forth about fathers being in the home and not being in the home. And I kind of, if I can go back, of course, I re-listen to the podcast if I feel like I really didn't get the gist of it.
Yes, ma'am.
But just from what I remember, Mr. Reed, she did say that she wasn't speaking about the fathers not being the participants in the family, but she was saying that they are not, they're absent. Like, it's so funny because, you know, my daughter, you know, I'm married, and my daughter, her friends, most of all of them don't have males in the household. It's just like, I'd say to myself, and, you know, we live in a pretty nice area here in New Jersey, and mm-hmm. I say to myself, like, we're not that their fathers are not participants, Scotty. They definitely are, but they're not living in the household with the mother, per
right.
se.
Right.
So I think that, I don't know, maybe... I don't get the gist when you say like male bashing or something like that. I have heard you read that statistic before, not with Miss Wellesley, but you know, again, I do agree that African American men do participate in the raising, but they may not be present in the household. Am I right? Is that where you were kind of leading to? And
yes. Oh well.
The only little thing that I saw. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir. You can speak.
Well, let me clarify. I wasn't angry with her, but I was getting agitated because I felt like either I wasn't doing a good job in communicating my questions, but I felt like my questions weren't being answered, and that a lot of the things that was said was not what I wanted to focus on in terms of this program. I was trying to get a psychoanalysis of the behaviors of non-white people that, for example, you know, the grandmother that blasted Black Lives Matter and whatnot, and white people made her internet famous for that. You had a black male who was thanking the police for not killing him. And whatnot, and of course, white people made him internet famous and whatnot. But it's not that I was approaching it from the angle of what's wrong with these people, but trying to understand why a person would take that viewpoint. How could a black male say that just because I have on a hoodie, I have a concealed and carry, so I was armed and I got pulled over, and these two white cops treated me with respect and dignity and whatnot, and so I guess people is lying. I'm paraphrasing what he said. So I guess most of you people are lying out there, and they're really not targeting black people. And so I would want it to get from a mental health professional an analysis of that type of thing. I mean, I have common sense, and I have my own conclusions that perhaps he doesn't have all the information. Perhaps he hasn't looked at the statistical data that shows that black people and other non-white people are disproportionately being killed and targeted and killed in the process of making them new slaves on the plantation today. And so, you know, just that's what I was looking for, a psychoanalysis as well as suggestions on if a person in my family or a person I consider a friend, and they express those kind of, I would call, ignorant views, ignorant meaning lack of information. How do I determine, is this a mental health issue? And if it is a mental health issue and they have these general views, anti-black views about black people, how do we treat those people? And I'm not talking about in terms of mistreatment, but I'm talking about in terms of medicine. How do we treat those people? Because I look at that as a mental illness. Stockholm syndrome.
Well, it's funny because it seemed like she kind of analyzed or going back to the basic premise of that it's all kind of stemming from white racism, you know, white supremacy, when she talked about, you know, the black guy in the classroom not wanting to stand up for the black woman, for the black girl. I thought in that situation, him being a black male, him being scared for his job, the police probably like, what the heck are you trying to stand up here for? You called me up if you thought you can do a better job. Why am I here? And that's the way I thought that she probably was trying to, you know, kind of bringing it back to the white supremacy. But I understand what you're saying. You were looking for more of anecdotes and just not one size fits all with respect to white supremacy. Is that what I'm kind of denoting here?
Yes, that's why I used the example of, well, this black teen student who also got arrested, who spoke out and said that this is incorrect and told all the other students that record, you know, to document this terrorist attack. Okay, so she had a totally different reaction to the act of terrorism that happened right in front of her than the black male. And so why didn't she have any fear? So that's what I was looking for. Why do we have such varied reactions to racism and white supremacy? I mean, I have my own thoughts on it, but I wanted to get it from a mental health professional to see if there was any mental aspects to it, and I fully understand.
The last thing I have to say,
yes, ma'am,
Mr. Reed, is that I just feel for yourself. You're a very strong man based on your background, because I've been listening to you for a while. I mean, you seem freer than a lot of people that I know, coming from your family background, and that you have any fear. You said it just a little while ago that we are a summation of all the input and output. I put it in my paraphrasing of what we have had happen in our lives.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I'm thinking, with that black male, the fear he felt because of mm-hmm. him being a black male, that other, like the girl, she had no fear. And I'm glad there's more people like her who don't have fear. They haven't been having all the input and output of other people. Like for yourself, you said you raised up, you're not enslaved. You raised up on a farm or something like that. So you kind of seem like, you know, you're that input of your parents, your father. You talk about your mom and your uncles who raised you, that you don't have that fear. They never instilled that to you. So, you know, it's funny when you look outside of that, you ask yourself, like, why do they have that fear? And the first thing I think about with people is, what is the input of that person from baby to now? What input and output have they gone? Because, again, in sociology, we always learn that you are summation of all the input and output that you've been around in your life. And that's what I think about that guy. He had that fear, like, I called you to help me. Now you're trying to take up for you know, take up for this woman. Why couldn't you do the job and not have me be around? And that's just the way I saw it. So that's how I see it with you, Scott. You're just very strong. You got a lot of great input in you, and you're not fearful. So, I mean, you know, I know sometimes it's hard to look at other people's situation, but I always revert back to the input and output.
See, that's why I brought her on.
Allow me the time.
Oh, thank you. That's why I brought her on, to help understand that. I mean, I do understand that. You know, I am a college educated person, and not that I put much stock in pieces of paper that white supremacists give you, but, you know, Malcolm X was self-educated, and I've always read a lot of books all my life. And so I already had an understanding of it, but I wanted listeners, because there are people who listen to this station who I heard on another program who were blasting this female, who were blasting this child, who were like, they were, now you want to talk about angry, they made me angry. Dr. Wilson did not make me angry. She made me agitate. I got agitated. All right. And then, you know, biting my lip and being respectful and whatnot, because that's how I was raised. But you know, I have seen these black males, heard some of these black males. And again, I wasn't talking about him specifically, because I would love to talk to that administrator and ask him questions. And there is no one size fit all psychoanalysis, but I was just trying to help other people to understand, you know, don't get so angry at him, but understand the different aspects of it. And then look at him as being, sick. Look at him as having a mental illness. Look at him being paralyzed with fear. And like you just mentioned, we don't know how he was raised. Maybe his parents raised him and said, don't piss off them white people. You know, you just need a job and, you know, you need to bring home money and all this and that. And don't be sticking your neck out for other people, because they wouldn't stick their neck out for you. And it's all about taking care of your family. Don't be worried about it. See, I don't know if that's the sort of input he got, and which if he did, that would explain his non-reaction to this terrorist attack on this black female. Okay. And so, but I just wanted to get, professional analysis from a psychiatric standpoint on these different behaviors that we're seeing exhibited among black people, because of, like she stated, we are not all monolithic. We all have different views. All right. And so some of us, you know, are going to act differently. All right. But I felt like, you know, there was some generalizations that were being made about black fathers. Again, where are you getting your information? I know where the information comes from, because I've studied the issue inside and out, because every time I see an article talking about single mothers, like it's just single mothers raising their children, I get angry. I get angry because I know I don't fit that stereotype. I'm the exact opposite. I was the single father, but I wouldn't dare call myself single because I had help. Help single means alone. You didn't have no help whatsoever. And that's another thing that a lot of people don't know, that black so-called single mothers have the best. And this is based on professional research. I have interviewed professors who have studied this issue, but black so-called single females have the best support network in this country than anyone on the outside. And I understand that all we can go by is off what we see around us. But again, like I told another person, there are estimated, and I believe that it's a low estimate, of 40 million black people in this country. And that hood that you work in, brother, as a social service, and you're seeing these single mothers and whatnot, and the fathers aren't in the home or whatnot. Well, that's as far as you know, because as far as you know, she's just trying to get that check, and they ain't married, and she's getting that, I'm not going to say it like that, but she's trying to get those resources from the state to help take care of her family, which is in poverty. And for whatever reasons, they didn't get married. And so they're going to hide the fact that there is a male in that home. Okay. And so where are these statistics, where they get that 70% single mother statistic from, they're going off of the birth certificates. They're going off of the tax records. If a first person files for taxes and whatnot, do they put single or do they put married or whatnot? They're going by the people that are getting assistance on the welfare rolls. Again, most black people are not on welfare though. And it does seem that perhaps it is that single mothers who don't have any help are concentrated in certain areas. I don't have all the answers. But I do know in my own community right here, just off of what I see the exact opposite. Well, I ain't going to say I see the exact opposite, but I see fathers, I got other cousins that's raising their children, and because the mother had issues or whatever. And maybe we making bad choices in partners or something like that. But I got other males in my family that are raising their children. And also I see, you know, the black females in my family, they got children. Therefore, my sister is divorced, but her ex-husband is still involved in her twin sons, his son's lives. But when she go to file her taxes, it's going to say single. She going to fall into the single mother category, even though I'm here as their uncle. And yes, I do participate in their life and upbringing and give them correction and also play with them, engage with them in recreational activity, just being a family. But I know their father does as well. So you can't go off of statistics, because statistics sometimes don't tell you the whole story, especially when we hide stuff from these government workers. So those are my thoughts on that. Tando Radio Show. Let me see if we got Brother Dave. Yeah, Brother Dave is dialed in, and we are going to transition to his program. I want to thank the caller for sharing her thoughts. Let me clear the caller queue for the next program.
Q&A queue is cleared.
All right, and y'all stay tuned. Tando Radio Show is coming on air, and Brother Dave will be talking about toxic foods are killing you, and you don't even know it. You may not even know all the stuff that we are consuming that is leading us to a death. The food is supposed to nourish. Food is supposed to give life, and they are creating food that is giving us death. In a lesser quality of life. So I want to thank Dr. Francis Kress Welsing for coming on the program and spending time on the program. I want to thank Sister Cece for setting up the interview. And I want to thank each and every one of you who tuned in to the program or shared it with others. Recognize the fact that you live behind enemy lines, that it's a battlefield out there. Casualties are being created every day. And so that you don't become a casualty, or so that you can decrease the likelihood that you will become a casualty, you need to develop codification. You need to develop skills, battlefield skills. You need to develop battlefield awareness, so that you don't become such an easy victim, or don't allow them to victimize you at all. All right. Take the enemy out before he take you out. So I'll be back on air Wednesday night. I don't do Black Talk Radio News on Wednesdays. I do New Abolitionist Radio at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time with my comrades Max and Johanan. That's New Abolitionist Radio, so I won't be back on air till then. Also, keep it locked tonight at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Why You Mad Son Radio. I might have to call in and tell them why I'm mad. You know what I'm saying? Since people want to say I'm mad and angry and whatnot. But no, I'm just a passionate person. You know, I get angry at oppression and at white supremacists and stuff like that. But I get disappointed, and I get agitated by the behaviors of other non-white people. But I'm not mad at them. Not mad at them, not angry at them, because I know ultimately who my enemy is. All right, let me shut up. Stay tuned for Tando Radio Show coming on right now.